Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to our podcast,
Life After the Letters. I'm Amelie.
And I'm Suba.
We're friends that met whilst working our first shifts as junior doctors.
And we're here to talk about the stories and challenges that we face every day.
Our next guest is a doctor that you have seen gracing your television screens. He is the resident doctor on Channel 4's Body Fixers and has launched his own range of lip products with Deciem. He is well known within his field as an expert for non-surgical procedures and an advocate of new technology. However, his journey did not start in aesthetics. Dr. Esho studied medicine at the University of Leicester, qualified as a doctor and began a career in surgery. He did his MRCS and core surgical training before considering others and then specialising in aesthetic medicine. He owns non-surgical clinics, one in Newcastle and another on London's famous Harley Street. He has won countless of awards in his field and is known to be an advocate for patient safety and comes highly recommended by his patients.
Yeah. Feeling myself right now, not gonna lie.
Oh, that's the best introduction for Dr. Esho.
That, yeah, you could, nah. Like, I feel sweet. That'll keep me going for a week at least.
And it wasn't even easy to get that introduction together. Like, there was so much I could have said there, but actually, I feel like Dr. Esho can say the rest himself.
Oh, man.
We had to limit his accolades. We didn't want to, like, turn this into his CV.
Yeah. No, so, not at all. Yeah,
no, yeah. We go stay humble, man.
But can we also talk about Suba? This is my first time on Harley Street.
Yeah.
I rock up to number 10, guys. I feel like I'm about to see the Prime Minister of aesthetics.
You know what? There's still time.
And no, it's just a beautiful clinic. So, Dr. Esho, can you tell us about your setup here and what it looks like?
Yeah, so Harley Street is like one of my smaller clinics. So we've got like one in Newcastle that's got 3 rooms, reception and treatment all across there. We've got one in Dubai now, which we launched earlier this year, which I go out to quarterly, which is a similar setup. Mm-hmm. Here in Harley Street, it's a bit more, it's one room, treatment room, but it's packed with everything. It's got every laser you could possibly imagine inside of here, almost every top of the range machine, and all the injectables as well, and then even a PRD centrifuge in the corner. So there's not really, yeah.
So thanks for clarifying what all these machines were.
You don't know this. This is a lot of machinery in here. Yeah. You know what? I don't shouldn't be saying this too much on the podcast, but you said the address. This is what it is. I need to get a security camera in here real quick because I don't want people robbing this stuff. But yeah, it's a lot of stuff in here, and it's a blessing because when I look back when I started, all I had was a fold-out bed from Amazon.
Isn't that
wow. would stick in the back of my car, and after my NHS shifts, like, because what I would do is work in my boss's private clinics, but then when I started doing my own thing, all I could do was get this little space in the spa. And so I had this like 20 quid fold out bed from Amazon and some business card from Vistaprint, you know, those ones
that you just do.
So from that to this, it's mad, but it's been a blessing.
I'm so excited to hear about that journey and how it began, what brought you here. And but we also need to give a shout out to the fact that you've got shelves and shelves of your own products.
Oh, man.
Actually mad, isn't it?
You know what? Like, I think one thing when we go on to, because I think I saw one of your questions about brand building, I always say one of the things is to try and make everything within your company from you. You know, I think I'm fortunate. I had a lot of people around me as I progressed through, and I try and absorb from everyone. And what I tried to do was go towards people who had built things. So it was like Graham Wiley, who made SagePay.
Yeah.
So I picked his ear one time. I was like, you know, what did you do? And he was telling me, like, look, you know, SagePay, the thing with SagePay was it was a disc. I could print it out. It was printing money. But it was making money while I wasn't working. He goes, son, you need to... Well, he keeps saying his son as well, you know? I was like, yeah. He said, yeah, you need to kind of look at the things that can, that unconscious income. So I was like,
yeah.
It's true, because I can only do so much in my hands, okay. You know, and then that's when I was like, right, actually, you know, let me start figuring out, you know, how do people bring out products? How do people make tech?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of these things, and slowly kind of build that. So then you have a clinic which not is just your clinic and your name, but everything from the products you use to the machine you use, you know, everything is embodiment of you. And then that's when you really become truly a brand, especially within aesthetics.
Yeah, dope. I almost wish I had a notebook with me. I'm going to write down unconscious income, because that's what I'm looking for,
unconscious
guys.
Unconscious income. You need that. You need that. Because, you know, God forbid, like, I remember a few years back, I was thinking, like, I think I watch too much Netflix, so I think of the two worst case scenario. Like,
you're with the right
time.
People here.
Yeah, that's it. So I thought, man, I don't know what episode I was watching something, and some guy's hands got mashed up, and I thought, wow, what if that happened to me? Man, like... there'd be nothing left. And then I was thinking, damn, this is what you actually, not just for the unconscious income anyway when you're putting, but you don't know what comes to you in life, what gets sent to you. Mm-hmm. And so you have to think, and you have to make that not just for yourself, for your family, everything else, and that's the key bit there.
Yeah. So let's take it way back. Mm. And can you tell us why you started medicine in the first place? Why you started to do it?
So, to be fair, it's because I'm Nigerian. Like, I'm going to say it out there. Like, most of you listening to this will be like, yeah, he's right. Because when I was, like, in my teens, I kind of... I only wanted to do drawing. Like, I used to sketch all the time. I sketched with my aunties and uncles. I loved graphic design at school, and that's all I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I remember telling my dad, yeah, I want to draw, I want to sketch. My dad's like, in my house? Yeah, foolish. So he told me, and I was like, what? Why are you killing my dreams? I was like, I hate you. And he was like, you could either be a doctor, a dentist, a lawyer,
an
engineer,
accountant?
Or an accountant. Yeah,
that's like five options.
Yeah, he was an accountant. So to be fair to him, he did give me other options than his career group.
Like, he was being generous with
it. He was being generous with the options. But,
put down the pencil.
And so, like, I was so vexed. I remember running away from home. Like, but
what?
Yeah, but not like properly. Like, you understand? Yeah, I was like 12.
When you say you ran away, you went out the front door.
Yeah, I went out the front door and ran to the bottom of the road, and I stayed there for about 2 hours, then got hungry and then came back. And it wasn't like you see on TV, you know, when you see the families like, oh my god, my son, come back. My dad told me to go find a stick in the back garden. And you know, people who know, when your dad tells you to go find a stick, I don't even need to say more from that. So, needless to say, I didn't run away from home again. But then after that, really, they set up a work experience for me at Whittington Hospital.
Okay. And, oh my god, I did the same thing!
There you go.
With the little 2 week thing.
Yeah. So,
check it out. Following in your footsteps.
There you go, you're ready.
What's your clinic
doing? I know, and it clicked at that moment, because I was on a surgical one, I was watching what we were doing, and I was like, actually, you know what? There is some relation to this art thing that you're doing here, actually, especially when you do it on people's faces. So I thought that was me. And then, so, you know, I did as my dad said, you know, went to, like, did my A-levels, did everything, got my grades. And the only thing, actually, to be fair, I wasn't going to go straight to med school, because I was dating a girl at the time.
It's always a girl.
There we go.
Yeah.
Give us the tea.
So I'm going to give you the tea. So, so I told my dad, like, I was like, I love her, dad. I'm not leaving.
I want to meet your dad. Can we meet your dad on the podcast?
You get, oh, no, you know what? You can't. I'll be saying, he will dish the absolute tea. So I can't, no. He signed to like a gag agreement, but like in that way. But I was like, I love her, dad. I can't leave. Because like, she was in a year below me. I was going to go away to uni.
Romeo
and stuff.
And Juliet.
And I said, And my dad was like, are you foolish again? He said, you are going. And that was it. So I remember hating it for a period. But then I broke up with her in like 3-4 months. Like, and everything. Because there's drama that happens when you're low business and you think you're in love, but you're in lust. That's who you are when you're that age. And that was it. And then it was the right thing, decision to do. Went through med school. And then, everybody saw me, and I think when you go into med school, you probably feel the same. Mm. You're boxed off into what people think you're gonna be, almost by your personality type and how you are. Mm. So, kind of, I was a bit cocky, confident, you know, give my answer that, surgeon. Yeah. And, you know, and then he boxed it, and I thought, right, this is me.
Yeah.
So I went through and, you know, that's what I thought was going to be me. But slowly, like, I got
And can I just interrupt you?
Yeah.
And when you started going into surgery, is that something that you felt excited about?
Big time. Like, you know, I felt at that time, like, man, this is me. You know, when I graduated, we made a joke because, to be fair, I remember going to med school and thinking, I do not fit in here. Because I went there. And I grew up in Edmonton, you know, so like, where we were, yeah.
Oh my gosh, Shuba is fangirling.
We're literally local.
We're local, where are you?
Wood Green, that's
I used to work in Wood Green. I worked at the Sega Park down there. Like, my dad made me work. My dad made me work. You know, again, this is another podcast. But like, my dad, like, when I was like 16, it's like, right, everybody's enjoying their summer holidays. But I was like, right, you are going to get it. And sent me down with a CV. Can you imagine? Dressed me up in a suit. You were saying about, oh, when did you start wearing suits? Then, okay? But I got me my first suit, sent me down there with my CVs.
Can we also talk about the fact that obviously now you have your low-pitched booming voice?
Yeah.
But we've already discovered that back then you had your little MJ
high-pitched. I had an MJ high-pitched voice.
Give me a and-
That's probably what it sounded like. And literally, I think it was like 16, 15, like... My uncle called the house, like, to speak to my dad, and I was like, hello? And he was like, bruh, who's that? Like, and I was like, it's me, uncle, it's me. And then, like, he was like, Jesus Christ. So since then, I've had this deep voice since then, it's just stayed, so kind of like Barry White. I've grown to like it now. Like,
yeah, it's soothing, I like it.
It is, it's one of those, so hopefully back. But yeah, going back, so when I was, where were we? I don't even know where we were.
So you were telling us about how your dad made you go get this job.
Yeah, yeah. So my dad wanted me to go get this job in Sega Park during that time. And yeah, it did, I think it was good because they kind of gave me values in a sense that almost they taught me work with reward, you know, work with reward each time. Yeah. They wanted me to understand how to manage my own money. Yeah. You know, my dad was an accountant. When I was at school trips, my dad would give me money and then ask me to do an opening and closing balance.
Yeah.
Whew. If I got it right, then I got to keep the money. If I got it wrong, then I didn't.
So you got it right.
So I got it right every damn time. You best believe trainers are expensive, man. And so, yeah, so I would do that all the time. So I think it kind of instilled those things into me kind of each time. But yeah, when I got to med school, I thought, man, it's a different world because no one's from my area. Mm. You know, I was like one, I thought I was the only black person first. Yeah. And I was like, wow, like, you know. And I remember arriving and these guys coming to me going, you want to play GoldenEye? And I was like,
What's
GoldenEye? Yeah, GoldenEye is like an old school game. See, this I'm showing my age. Here. You know,
like a video game.
Yeah, video game. But an old one. Like Tetris old. You know?
Okay.
So then, and then I remember thinking, man, I don't need to be here. And then, like, I saw one black guy across the room.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, anyone would know will see. When you see another black guy, you nod anyway. For whatever reason, I don't know, genetically, you just go, yeah, cool. And we just ran to each other. It was like a Romeo and Juliet type thing.
I imagine like those Bollywood movies.
Yeah,
like,
it was like that. We were something there. It was like, see, exactly that, man. It was Leicester, man, so it was like that. And then we went through, and they're like, we were like, yo, we've got to stick together. And I remember us walking through the corridor, looking at the photos. And in each photo,
of like the sort of
the people graduated before,
and
there was one black guy in each photo.
Yeah.
So we were like, "Only one of us can make it."
Yeah,
it's like statistically,
sorry, man, you gotta go.
You gotta go. It's me or you. Yeah. And I was like, "Yo, man, like I like you right now."
But my dad.
Exactly.
I can't go back. I'm like, take a stick with me.
My dad's like, sorry, we gotta cut you off. But we both made it in the end. So it was
they increased their quota.
They increased the quota.
Oh, that's nice of them.
Yeah. No, but it was good. And then you know when we got through, because we both were in the surgical training, he went to orthopedics, I wanted to go to plastics. And I think we both were similar in a sense, we started getting disillusioned with what was happening. At that time, the year I was coming through was that year where there was that big crisis where there wasn't enough jobs for doctors. A lot of doctors went to Australia, New Zealand, away.
Yeah.
A lot of people went out of medicine, so a lot of my mates went into business in the city. Yeah. You know, there was different decisions to be made.
So was this kind of like the first time that was happening?
Yeah.
Doctors are now, actually. Like, for us now, that's really common.
Yeah,
like,
no, it was one of the, it was one of the first times it was happening. Yeah. Because I think what had happened years before, there was a shortage.
Yeah.
So they opened up admission, and then everything funnels again.
Yeah,
once you get into that SHO type level, everything funnels because then if there's not enough jobs, then where do they go? And, you know, for me, in hospital, what started happening was, and probably still for you guys, it was different for what the surgical people beforehand. They were getting to do things, you know, they were doing appendices from house officer level. You know, we were struggling to get bits at registrar level, you know, we were getting de-skilled and it wasn't great. Where then in my boss's private clinics, I was learning non-surgical treatments. I was getting really good at them. And I felt like my own boss. I didn't feel like I was part of this system that was like holding me down. Don't get me wrong, the positive bits of the patients was great. But I still felt I was doing positive things in that clinic as well.
So it's kind of at your level. Because you were a registrar.
Exactly.
In your day job, you weren't getting the
No, expected to be getting. Exactly.
But in your private clinics with your boss, you were...
It was getting that autonomy. I was getting that autonomy. And, you know, when I kind of look back, I remember having a conversation with him saying, like, you know, what would you do? Because I'm getting, you know, I'm not sure what I want to do going forward for me. I need to choose what I want to do with my life. And he said to me, I remember him saying that, look, you know, if I was doing surgery now, I couldn't be doing what you're doing. It's a different game now. And from that moment, that's when I started to kind of decide. And then it took from there. And, geez, it's just, like, exploded.
So I know you sort of spoke to us briefly about it before. What was that process then? So you kind of had this conversation with your boss.
So then, I had to have that conversation with my parents. So you need to understand. So I sat down with Mr. Escher, the boss. And I was like, hold on. So you need to tell me I sent you to medical school. And now you are leaving your secure job in the NHS. For this jalo job. I was like, Dad, but I'm serious about it. I'm like, you know, I'm good at this. And he didn't understand. My mum was like going, why don't you be a pediatrician? And I was like, Mum,
where did that come from?
Where did that come from?
I mean, that's so mum though, isn't it?
It is, you know. Yeah. She just was like, oh, you're really good with kids. Yeah. I was like, it don't work like that. I'm good with kids, but I don't like seeing kids sick. It upsets me, you know, it's a different mentality. And I said, look, honestly, I'm really good at this. And so my dad was like, look, no, you know, you need to be secure in your plan, you know. So we kind of came to a middle ground where I said, look, why don't I combine it? Because he wanted me still to get a CCT. So then general practice was there. I'm not saying it was an easy option, but it was the one that allows, I think, entrepreneurs really to have an almost portfolio career. So it allows you to combine different aspects as well together.
I feel like entrepreneurship was built into GP in a lot of ways. Because actually there's so much, even within the medical job, you become a partner, you run your clinic, you can expand that.
Even like so many times I've said as part of it, there should be an MBA. You know, there should be, you know, because before you come through, a lot of doctors, you know, you become limited companies, everything, you're paying yourself. No one teaches you about any of that.
Not at all.
And actually, you are business people in your own right. So I think as well as the medicine, you know, at least for a year or 6 months, there should be an MBA-related module that focuses on all those things. Because when you come out, all of a sudden, you know, you've got this money, or not much, but you're still growing with the money, and you don't know really what to do with it as much.
And I think you definitely touched upon it when you said, when you went to go and work with your boss, actually you gained a lot of autonomy. And I think autonomy is what's missing from the NHS these days. And it's really interesting when we look at all the ratios over the past couple of years. Actually, I think about 50% of people go into training now after their F2 year, whereas before that number was about 80-90%. So there definitely needs to be a shift and a change in the autonomy of clinicians.
And I think as well time, because I think people expect you very quickly to know what you like. There's so many different specialities. Like how you support, you know, you get given your rotation, you're lucky if you get your first bit, but how do you know that's going to be the thing for you rest of your life? You could do a year, 2 years of it and not think, you know, this is an option for me. But very quickly, because time's going and you need to do exams and you need to get jobs, you have to figure out very quickly what you want. And that's why a lot of people end up changing at different parts of their career, because they've committed too early.
And I mean, the reality is, in our training pathway, you make a decision about your future career 1 1/4 bit into working. That's crazy.
Any other specialty is unheard of. That's unheard of.
It's crazy. And back in the days, you know, like when our consultants were sort of choosing their pathways, they would spend 3-4 years at SHA level just rotating, but you'd build experience. And actually that training still counts. The frustrating thing is nowadays, say if you go off for 2 years and you do a job and actually you come back and you're really skilled, you still have to go back to square one.
And it almost sometimes can count against you because then people think, well, why were you waiting this bit? Why weren't you certain about what you wanted to do? So it can be quite difficult.
It's inflexible sometimes.
But
also people don't respect the flexibility of it. So we've got one A&E registrar. Well, he's a registrar, but actually he's not actually done a lot of his exams. So he would classify as an SHO, essentially. But this guy has done training in absolutely every area. And he's the person that you will go to and ask for advice and ask for questions. And he will just get the department running. But this guy's only an SHO. And I say only, but he's got years of experience. But I suppose our training just doesn't really allow for people to progress financially as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Even despite the experience they have. Yeah. So you kind of got to do it on your own.
You have to do it on your own and you have to find your own way. And that's why in the end with that discussion, we managed to. And then, you know, initially still my mum was like, oh no, I don't know. You know, my dad was like, my mum got it before my dad did, because obviously my mum was paying attention and started seeing me like in magazines and TV and different things. She was like,
I bet she's keeping all the
clips. And she was like, oh, maybe he's really good at this. But it's a different world from them, especially aesthetics. It's very far removed from what they know. And I think the time my dad got it, and this is still talking about, like, I've been doing it for a while.
I was going to say, if you're a magazine, this isn't like, oh, dad, like, a week later.
It was a week later, like, just grab it in, catch me in Vogue, yeah. No, like, not until, I'm telling you, last year, fully, was when my dad got it. Like, he got it beforehand because he's an accountant, so he started seeing the accountants, and he was like, eh, eh. making that paper. So that was all right. But then also, he was still wanting that academic, like, you know, just that prestige, you know. And I think when I was, so front cover of Times magazine in April last year, I think that's when he got it. That's when he was like, this, my son's doing something here. Like, even I don't understand industry, like, for him to be on the front cover of that magazine,
like you're part of the institution now. That's actually
crazy.
It would literally blow my parents' mind if they saw me on TV.
It was almost like a bit of a little national holiday where my family are from in Nigeria. My mum bought out every one of those magazines. I was actually in Monaco at the time giving a lecture on our Malaysians. And so I wasn't actually... Just dropping it, you know. And, you know, my team just dropped me this message. And we were like, because there wasn't proper Wi-Fi in the hotel. And so this image was just spinning. They were like, oh my God, look at this. And I'm thinking, what have I done? That's almost what I do, because I feel like a naughty child. So I'm like, what have I done, what have I done? And then it was loaded and went. And then that loaded and I was like, oh my days. And yeah, a lot changed from that moment.
Amazing.
Can we talk a bit about your mentor? Because I know you sort of touched on your boss that had a private clinic. At that point in time, was it what it is today? I imagine it was different.
It was different. It was very much, you know, every, like, kind of people in plastics, the majority back then had, you know, either their own private clinic or, you know, were part of a private institution. You know, it was hand in hand within plastics, really. And it was very small, but busy. You know, and I think aesthetics then as well really wasn't as crowded as it is now. You know, I always go back to the, what I say, the four kings and queens. So there were main people doing it back at that time. So you had people like Dr. Praga, you know, Tapan Patel, Rita Raucus, you know, all these big names.
They've got such good names as
No, you would think they made them up. Exactly. But they were there and they were doing this. And so... really, everybody else was kind of unlike. But now, as I think I was speaking to you before we did it, like, because there's so much tools to your own utilization, you know, you don't really have to be from an extra privileged background or have things to break through. You know, a lot of the excuses you tell yourself, they're no excuses anymore. You know, you go, oh man, well, you know, I ain't got the resources. You know, social media's free. You know, you got website builders on the things that are free. You know, you
can do,
the opportunities are there. YouTube, you know, you can do your things to grow your brand within and get out there. You just need to get creative and understand yourself. And you can do all of those things.
Because obviously, you're operating in a very different field to, like, your mentors. Because like you say, you know, back then it was sort of, you got to the end point and you can easily then expand into these sort of things. And along the way, you're probably building that kind of, you know, that clientele. Whereas now, it is a lot more about your branding and your sort of social media presence. And even, you know, looking at your magazine cover, the way they phrased you as, like, the selfie doctor will see you now. It's so sort of like sound bites of now. And
But what I do say is, still, even now, it takes time. So a lot of people don't realise, so sometimes people will look and go, and you said all those things and I've said it. A lot of people just thought I popped out of nowhere. Mm. You know, for many people, that's it. They just people think they popped out of nowhere. You know, and people want to be the, I mean, I'm always saying I'm a finished article. People want to be the finished article before they even there.
Also, people don't understand the journey that you've had previous. I don't even think a lot of our listeners would have heard of the years and years of training that you've gone through.
Yeah.
And it's actually quite interesting. Subra and I, on our Instagram yesterday, we posted that we were interviewing you today, so we allowed those people to ask questions.
Mm.
But you know when people don't know how to use Instagram, right? And they're meant to, like, message... Let's say they're trying to message their... You know when they're trying to message their friend a picture and say, oh my gosh, and they start putting, like, snidey comments on it.
Spill the tea.
Some people, they send the snidey comments to us, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is such a microcosm of what probably Dr. Esho is getting on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting that people think that you're their competition.
Yeah.
And also that you've somehow got this overnight.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of people... So it's funny. So if I dial it back in different stages, so there was a time like we go back to when I had my fold-out bed.
Yeah, I literally was like, we need to speak about the fold-out bed.
And literally, even like, there was one time I had a patient and she had some Louboutin heels and she kicked a hole in it, so it still had a hole in it for a good hour. And I was so vexed because this was the only fold-out bed I had.
You tried to like patch up
that? Yeah, I tried to patch it up, it did not work. You know when you get your surgical stitches?
Yeah.
Tried to stitch a leather like that, it didn't work, man. Works for wounds, not for leather. Literally, I had that. And all I had was Instagram. So the only thing I did different back then than what everyone else wasn't doing was people weren't showing their work.
Yeah.
People were showing a bit on websites and different things. But before, I think people were afraid. I don't know. Maybe they were afraid.
Of course
maybe
they were.
I don't know. But I was just putting myself out there. And that's a scary place to be. Yeah. To make yourself vulnerable, just put yourself, all your work out there and say, this is me. You know, it's not an easy thing to do. People are doing it now, but back then it wasn't.
Yeah. And it's scary to do that as a doctor as well, because you've never been taught to do that.
No.
And actually, the questions I bet that you've got in all your interviews is, how do you deal with putting your life out there, your work out there? How do you manage your brand? How do you manage what you say?
Yeah.
But let me not interrupt you. Continue.
Yeah.
And, I mean, also to add the whole bringing your personality to your job, because I think so often as doctors, we're taught to be professional, put on the mask, the white coat, all these things that, like, rip away you. Whereas I feel like your brand is you. You come in,
you have to
yourself.
Be you when you're doing it. The first thing I think I decided very early, and I think I thank my parents for that, was to be kind of proud of who you are and not let that compromise what you're going to do.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't understand, even when I was in NHS, I always would have fun on the wards and nurses, it was always a good job, because I'd be like, look, you can have fun, you can have jokes, as long as you're still getting a job done.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to be like,
stressed
and serious
and
being a certain way.
Yeah.
You know, you can, that's what's beautiful about all of us, we're all different people, we're all the same, we'd be a very boring world. And so that's what I wanted to come across in my Instagram, was like, I'm gonna be me, my spelling mistakes, my grammar, everything else is gonna be me, you know. And I put that there, and that was it. I put it all out there, and you know, at that time, man, I was getting like maybe 10 11 likes. No, I was getting 9 likes, and I'd like it myself to make it double numbers. You know that one.
Yeah.
So to get that double numbers, I call my mum, can you like this thing?
And then you get your 11, and then it says 11 likes.
Yeah, 11,
yeah.
You know, and then, you know, it started them picking up, and then, you know, it was like a couple of months, and it was like 50, then like 100, and I started feeding myself, call my mum, so we don't have to live like this no more, you know? And
throw away that phone out.
Yeah, throw it with this, this is it, you know? And it built, and then, even then, you face different challenges. So one of the biggest challenges I faced, not, you know, we talked about it with my parents and them understanding, but it was with colleagues as well.
Mm.
So, you know, aesthetic practice is sometimes seen in different ways from your colleagues. You know, sometimes people, I remember when I was first doing it, it was building. So obviously things start changing, you know, so I got a new car and different things, and I was still in NHS and I was driving, I could see class AMG or something, and then, you know, your boss was like, oh, it's a nice car.
I know your salary.
That's a nice leather bag. What salary is this guy cutting? You know, driving a better car than me, you know. But then at the same time, they're not seeing the flip side that, you know, you were coming out of your NHS job, then you were doing your private clinic job, you were doing hours, you know, doing stupid hours each time. So you were grafting, you were putting in the work, so you deserved the reward, and anyone deserved that. But it wasn't just about the money. Because, you know, if it was that, I would have gone into investment banking like my cousins and everything, cashed out
early
and done that. That's not the thing.
I mean, the bottom line is that if you're a doctor, you've got a certain degree of intelligence,
yeah,
and there are a lot of avenues to make there's a lot of avenues money
to do
for how hard you
yeah
work.
And you're teachable. That's why when I said, you know, a lot of people in that time when I was gone left to go for medicine to other things, they love doctors because it shows we're teachable and we've got skills. So then people went into business and different things in the city and made very, you know, lucrative jobs. Well, the job satisfaction was there, I don't know. But for me, it was, wow, this is something I'm good at, something I love, and yes, I'm doing well from it. So it all kind of came together. But then it just built up over time. And even when I started doing some TV bits, by then I had grown a reputation on social media and different things. So when people...
But also in real life.
And so like you say, so one of the things is a lot of people are like, oh, he's just... You know, he's got that show on E4, so that's the only reason. It was from way back before
then.
You know, that hadn't really nothing to do. It opened me to another audience, but it didn't inform what I did. That was way back from then. So you know, that's where it is from there. But I always say it's the same for people. Like, you're not, no one's, and I genuinely mean this, no one is anyone's competition. You know, you make your own lane. You know, and as long as you do that and you focus on yourself, geez, you know, there's no limit to what you can achieve and do. And especially one of the biggest things, because I don't know the people that were messaging you, if they were like, you know, Nigerian or different things or things like that. Yo, one of the biggest things I say is, man, we should be supporting each other.
Absolutely,
You know, and we should be building, because, you know, if you look in different realms now, so you look in music, you see in sport, you see in things, there's a change happening, you know. It's a change that's been coming for a while. You know, there's been a lot of talent that's been marginalized because of backgrounds, and now there's a change. So particularly in this field, whether it's aesthetics, whether it's not, we should be all supporting each other and pushing each other to do better. That's what you should be doing.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Actually, what was interesting to me, it was cosmetic doctors and estheticians of messaging. So... how have you found, as you've gained more success, how have you found the industry's been receiving you?
Yeah, so originally, I think when I first broke through, because, you know, they don't tell you, it's the product people that bring the products, they tell you. So I remember when I was first breaking through, and I was a really small account back then, and I remember one, I won't mention her name, which was really nice, and she said, you know, TJ, you're making a lot of people nervous. And I said, what? And she said, like, you know...
what does that mean?
I said, what does that mean? She's like, I'm coming to see you. And these are bigger accounts than you. And then, like, oh, you're just going to see Dr. Esh. You know, what's he like? You know, what's he about? You know, just little things like that. Just what, you know, and all, you know, I heard he's just, you know... first it was like, oh, I heard he just likes to party. I was like, party when?
With what time?
DJ Pillow. Party beds. You know, that's it. That's me. You know, I'm like, yo, when? I would love that. Like, it does just not happen. I rarely get time off. And when I do, then I shut off everything. But it's rare. And then, so then I thought, man. And she was like, oh, don't worry. Some people I heard off comments were like, oh, you know, he's just a bit flash. He's a bit of a fad. It's this and that. then things start happening. So, you know, yeah, the press start happening, then the following start happening, then the clinic started building, then the time suit. And then I think, obviously, again, when the time suit happened,
yeah.
that, I think, made a lot of people go, this guy ain't going away
anytime soon. Yeah.
And started to make people. And one of the biggest things, I think, is also as well, is it's a good thing about social media and a bad thing about social media. People assume they know you.
Yeah.
And they can take a different interpretation from what you post, different to what you are.
Yeah.
And what I found was, because it was like, you know, I thought, was, you know, I was trying to motivate and I'm trying to do, and sometimes when I post motivation posts, it's not for people, it's for myself to kind of regulate myself and get myself in a certain mindset. And sometimes that's taken by people like, man, yeah, this guy's inspiring me and doing it. Some people are like, oh man, this guy is just gassed, he's just doing this and this.
Can I actually pause you on that as well? Because I remember me and Subu, we were talking about one of the posts that you did yesterday. And no, not yesterday, you did a while back. And I think it's like a helicopter. And the caption underneath it is like,
we used to catch buses.
You used to run for the WA.
Yeah, WA. Exactly, you know.
Yeah, you know.
Do you know what's mad from that? Actually, for those of us who were catching buses and know those bus routes, that is such an important reference for us because we can see, oh my gosh, that's what we've been doing, like our entire lives. Yeah. That's what our parents still do to this day.
Yeah.
And now it's actually very mad that we're standing in front of a helicopter.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for that, us for receiving that is interesting. Yeah. But for other people receiving that, maybe they think, oh, he's just a flash show off.
Yeah, I think for people that understand that story, they know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think I had this conversation with a boy who did the same thing. He's doing football coaching, he's done really well for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to say the same. He goes, for them, the wine will never ever taste as sweet.
Yeah.
And that is because when you come from those ends, like Edmonton Green,
There's no helipad there.
No helicopters are landing there. You know, police come there, but no helicopters are landing there.
Blue lights.
So when you come from that, you know, and I literally say always, you know, without all these kind of, you know, things like that, you know, it's all about family and that. But all these things always surprise me to every day. I'm like a little kid in this.
Yeah.
You know, I never thought, you know, I wasn't impoverished, but you know, we weren't, you know, living large, you know, family and stuff like that, and it taught me values and that. But now to be able to have like a house in Wimbledon, to be able to be fine, because I have the cars, all these different things, but then also have the family and the friends surrounding it, it's a blessed place to be, and I count my blessings every day for it. But I can see how then when sometimes people see that, then they'll be like reading a certain way.
Yeah.
It's only till then when they meet you in person,
they're like, it makes sense.
And I get it every single time. Yeah. I sit there and I'm just chatting, and they go, you know what, you're quite chilled, you think? And I said, yeah, what do you expect me to be?
Yeah.
You know, I'm the same guy. I still go down to Edmund tomorrow and I'll be in like Chiking or Fez, you know, with the boys and sitting there in my value box, you know, and that's it, you know. But yes, tomorrow I might sit in the Ivy with someone else and be doing, you know, I can go between because I was from both. I was from one and I grew into the other.
Yeah.
So, you know, that doesn't make you different.
So how do you find it being in a sort of, you know, coming from humble sort of things and being in a sort of, you know, more bougie place, shall we say? Do you feel that actually, like, because in a way, would you say that, like, you know, obviously you're still type of family, how do they see you kind of,
you know,
when they see you in those environments, are they a bit like,
you know what, it was good because it shows you when you're building a certain level of success. I always say, you know, I haven't made it, there's so much to do, you know. A lot of people say, oh, you may not. No, the work is just getting done. But it shows you who your real friends are and who not.
Yeah.
And what was great was I've got a tight, so what was great is you got a I had a tight community and I still have a friend that, you know, had my back. Every time I was doing something big, they're like, you're hype man. They're like, I saw this and do it. And it was the same back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And even some of my friends that weren't doing my special but doing other things in life, it was pushing them to do more.
Yeah.
And so there's a big group of us and mates that we grew up, we knew each other since we were like 7, you know, and we've still been friends today. Each time we meet each other, it's like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that were just fully supporting. You will get others and you will find this in your life that all of a sudden start acting differently. And it's not because you've changed, but it's because they're acting differently because of your success.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start feeling that negative energy, you've got to cut it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can give it time and let people to know, but sometimes people aren't going to be there. It's okay to grow apart from people, you know, because sometimes people don't have that mindset.
Yeah.
Just as you don't maybe have that mindset to sit on your ass and not do anything and blame the world for different things. They don't understand the mindset you have of going out there and getting it. I think it's just been given to you. So it can clash in that way sometimes.
So we've talked about where you started. Do you mind just like taking us through where you've got your education from around aesthetics?
So a lot of it happened obviously during the first of my surgical training at that time as well, because I was getting a lot taught in the private clinics from there. And then a lot happened within Harley Street here itself. A lot of the courses, particular ones with Allergan and different other institutions as well. There was one another as well, Cosmetica in Liverpool as well. And what happened was, you know, again, this is what I tell people when they message me and they talk about, oh, you know, I want to come through and I want to do this and I want to be now. You know, I'm like, man, I was focused. I didn't even want to put myself out there at that time. I was just busy trying to watch, learn, absorb, you know, and do. And then when I started coming to a point, because you can imagine, if you're putting yourself out there at that beginning stage, when you're just even understanding what a needle can do, you know,
what do you expect?
What are you going to put out there? You know,
what are you going to put out there?
You know, you're not getting no likes for that. You know, is it? So, you know, wait, be calm, you know, hold it out. Because sometimes it's not good being out there. As you've seen, and then other bits and different things, you have to have a tough skin. Because no matter how good you are, you know, no matter how, you know, great maybe people think you are, there's going to be people that will hate you for the way others love you. And that will always be there.
Okay, so I just wanted to run through the questions because I think we've got about 10 minutes left. But I know we've got so much more that we want to ask you. So we spoke to our audience, and they were talking about this Snapchat dysmorphia, which you actually coined.
Yeah, I came up with that.
So can I just say it's so mad that people are using your term?
I know, they use my term and they don't even know I came up with it.
So can you tell people what Snapchat dysmorphia is and how that relates to your business?
So what happened was, I would say over the last 5 years, you know, people before would come in referencing different pictures of models that they would see. That was the old way people did, because sometimes people couldn't articulate what they wanted. So they bring a picture of a model or actress and that was it. And then you say, okay, I like this bit of her, this bit of her, this is what I want
to
achieve.
And that tend to be facial features.
Yeah, facial features. And if it was realistic or not, then, you know, we would talk about that and see if it was achievable. Now, with the introduction of social media platforms, people weren't doing it anymore. They were using Snapchat filters in a way it would change the nose, the cheeks,
the lips. Imagine coming in with like the dog filter.
Yeah,
like, sorry,
Well, you know what? You know what? The one that people will come with the most? The Halo one with the flowers.
Oh, yeah, I love that
one. Yeah, that one makes me look
like I'm like, see, people think that they look
like the little butterfly one.
I get you, and I'll be like, you want the butterfly too?
Shady doctor,
You know, like that. But really, it, in a way, still, if it was a reference point, it was okay. Because it was a closer reference point, because actually it was using you, but changing. But then the problem became, was I was seeing people that were saying, no, I want to look snatched like this photo, you know, and I'm looking at it, it's not possible. Like, it's not. But people were saying they want to. And because of that, it, you know, it worried me. And I remember just in the clinic being with my assistant, and I said, man, like, it's like everybody's got Snapchat dysmorphia or something. And then we just started talking about it.
Mic drop.
And then, like, it's I started tweeting it. And then before I knew it, it just started picking up. And then I even saw the other day, it was in JAMA, and then, you know, and they were quoting me. And then I saw in some American paper, psychology paper, they were quoting me. And I was like, man.
Oxford Medical.
I was like, is someone going to pay me? Like, you know, like, I don't know. Like, I just need to figure this out. I'm Nigerian. I'm still a businessman here. I'm happy I came, but yo. You know, but then I said, I thought, can I trademark it? But because it's got Snapchat in it, I'm sure that if I trademark it, then, oh, you won't be able to. Snapchat will come for me. So, yeah, I don't want them to come for me. So,
I can't.
So, it's it.
That's too big a brand.
Yeah, exactly. No.
So, the next question I'm fascinated to hear is, people want to know the secrets to the golden lip ratio. So tell us, DaVinci. What's your
secret? So there's original golden ratio, the fire ratio, which really basically says in terms of the lips, the bottom lip is 2/3 the size of the top lip, you know, roughly, okay, like 1.6. But now I kind of made my own Escher ratio based on that, because what I saw was there was a change, big shift. If you look at people now, everybody now wants a more ethnic look.
Yeah.
Not just when it comes to faces, when it comes to everyone in the body, every girl doing squats, everything. Yeah. You know what I mean? Everybody wants to have a more ethnic look. So from that 2/3 ratio, now it became a more 50-50 ratio. Mm.
That's so interesting, isn't it? How much the beauty norms influence it all naturally, what people want.
And I think if you dial back in the next 20 years, everybody's going to merge. So I've looked at those images where they merge all those ethnicities together and they show what people look like. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think it's good in a way that people are appreciating these things. Because before now, you know, like say now that merger of the lip being a 50-50 ratio, you know, my lips, I have people going to me, oh, Dr. S, you know, what do you put in your lips? I'm like, DNA. Like, you know, it's Nigerian.
I've been born like
you know, DNA. It's
DNA. Oh, is that a new product?
Yeah,
from the market?
Yeah, can I be injected? That? No, you foolishness. So, that's the same thing. So, but back then I was, you know, people teased me.
Yeah.
You know, people were like rubber lips, big lips, you know, and everything. Now people paying to have those lips,
it's
you know.
Crazy.
So it's crazy. But yeah, it shows how those ratios change. So when I described it, now it was more 50-50 ratio rather than the 1/2. It had different features which people liked, which was the peak cupid's bow, and also the bottom lip just being slightly dipped. So that together made up what I call the Escher kind of triad together.
And I guess because you're getting all the exposure to like all the people that you're seeing, obviously what the industry's like, it's you're in the prime position to...
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a way you realise you start to dictate influence in a way. And you don't... It's good and then also a pressured position to be in.
Yeah.
Because then what you need to realise is everything you do, people are looking to it. But then also you're trying to set an example for others coming through.
Yeah.
You know, particularly people from my background as well. You know, everything I do, I'm very proud of that.
Yeah.
And I take it very seriously. And, you know, that was one of the things that the charity stuff started coming in. Because I was doing it already kind of low-key.
Yeah.
Because within clinics, you know, I'd get situations where patients were coming for corrective work. And I know they didn't have that money because I could feel it, you know, and it was similar backgrounds. I knew, I was like, I know you don't have this money to do this. And, you know, there was times I'd just say, there's no payment, you know, and they'd be like shocked, like, why? And I just said, look, it's fine, you know, and everyone can do that, you know, especially in my industry. I said, anyone could do that. You can't tell me, you know, we're fortunate in the position to be. If you establish yourself and you've got a clinic, you can once a day or whatever go, you know what, it's on me today. You can.
Yeah.
You literally can. And so then I thought, when I had the show, Body Fixers, I started getting more people coming, you know, particularly seeing that fixing gun.
I mean,
this desperate situation, I've had this acid burn or this, can you help me? And so I thought, right, I need to find a more formal way of trying to organise this. And I realised I started to get some influence. So I thought, right, let me bring these companies that want to attach themselves to me in a way.
Yeah.
So let me bring pharmacies, you know, product things to come together to give their stuff free so I can do this. And all I needed to do then was give my time.
Yeah.
And that's how the Escher Initiative became born.
Mm-hmm.
And it grew because, in a way, that was the foundation in kind of treating that in terms of the botched work and then trauma and then congenital things. But for me, it's always been bigger. And it's like down to even going into schools, you know, it's like where I grew up in Edmonton. Because at that time, I remember when I grew up in Edmonton, you know, and I wanted to go to med school. And I remember the year ahead coming to me saying, you know, are you sure about this? You know, that was deep. It wasn't even...
That's actually so deep. That
is,
what is it your problem?
It wasn't even, oh, you know, let's give you the tools. Let's show you. It was like, you sure? You know, it was like maybe this, you know.
Yeah.
There wasn't that motivation. And so it almost was at that stage. I remember then it was like, unless you kicked the ball or you did stuff, there really wasn't that much focused success for you.
Yeah.
And so to open up another avenue to say like, look, you know, you can do this, you know, you can, if you want to, and give you the support and show you how, those are things I want to do. And definitely the end game for me is to start doing things back in Nigeria. I said it to my dad, I said it to everyone else, you know, there's a lot to do, you know, but you have to plan, you know, so there's a big plan, you know, not all of it's out there yet, but there's a big plan.
And I suppose that brings me on to what I'd like to ask you just generally. What are your goals for the future? Where do you see Escher Initiative or Escher Clinic going?
For me, I think one of the biggest things, again, I think we talked about before I came on air, was talking about how I kind of sit and I kind of try and absorb around from people who've got big success. And I ask them, you know, or, you know, how do you do it, or what do you do? And a lot of things I hear from them, the really ones that made it big, or like, you know, they said to me, TJ, you have to make sure you put in your head where you decide when is enough.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, you will always be chasing something.
Because you can.
Yeah, because you can. Yeah. You will always chase a bigger house, more cars, you know, more success, more this.
Yeah.
But you end up losing. Because what you give up in the end is time, is family. You know, you did all of those things at first to get that, to get the opportunities to have, you know, autonomy, time and family. So for me, I said, you know, there's a lot of things coming in terms of there's a book, you know, there may be a show, we ain't gonna say too much, you know, and, you know, for me, really, it's to open the big flagship clinic for London.
Yeah.
And at that time, really, you know what, I'll be happy. I'll be happy, you know. For me, then it's focused on family, it's focused on friends and living life, because, you know, we're here once, you know. So, and then again, a lot of it for me at that point, if I'm in a privileged position, is just to give back, because, you know, you go away in life and then what happens, you know, you're done, that's your time. But what you leave is legacy, and legacy is so important to me. So not just in your family, but how you can affect people around you, and you can. So finding ways through the initiative to do that is definitely another thing for me.
Amazing. So you've obviously got like your point in your mind of like
When it's enough. Yeah, you have to. I think we have to.
That's interesting. I never even thought of that as a concept.
Yeah.
But of course you need to do
that.
Also, a lot of our conversation with you, I feel like the recurring theme I've heard a lot from you has been sort of you saying, I'm not there, you know, I'm making it, I'm still growing, I'm still etc. etc. So it's interesting because obviously you've got such a mentality of like
growth,
always striving.
Yeah.
But I think you've got to have an endpoint.
Yeah, you have to have an endpoint, but sometimes you don't, and you have to also. My friends taught me this, to be able to look and take a step back and see what we've achieved. Because I remember, like, you know, even since this last month was coming, then one of my friends sat me down and was like, "Dude, you're on the front cover of Times magazine. Do you understand that? Do you understand the level of that?" And then talking about all these others, have you had this fold-out bed? And now you've got free clinics globally.
Happened to the fold-out bed?
I still got it.
I knew you
would have it.
Still,
I was like,
of course. Still. When my kids, when I have kids,
you're gonna be like,
you see this? You see the son or daughter? You see that? Your dad grafted. Anytime they act up,
you still got the hole.
Yeah, you still got the hole. Anytime they act up and they're wrong, I'd be like, you see this? I did not sweat on this bench for you to be acting all crazy.
Then you feel like this person's who is dad. And you're like, I'm seeing who your dad is. Yeah,
fully. I know that. You know what? The time I realised when I turned into my dad was the day when I sat down and I ate food and I fell asleep. I thought, age caught me real quick.
I used to laugh
at my dad about that. And I thought, look at my dad asleep like that. And that was it. And it happened to me. I was like, it's there. But yeah, no, you know, I'm thankful for him because, you know, in many ways he was very strict, as most kind of Nigerian parents were. I remember one time.
And like, Tamil.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 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 totally. There you go, every best. Like, I remember coming to medical school and everybody was hugging their kids, saying, my dad gave me some military shake. It's a salute. Made it. My mum was like, hug him. He said, no hugging.
Don't do that.
And like, I was like, right, like, am I adopted or something? You know, where's the love? You know, but then when I graduated, that was the first time I saw him change. He like hugged me and I was like, wow. And my mum said, you know what, he's happy because he feels his job is done. And I get that. And, you know, if it wasn't for him and his mum, you know, unfortunately, particularly in the area I grew up, there may have been different things I could have got into, because some of my friends did.
Yeah.
So I hope I have that same thing for when my time comes, you know, to put that for my children and stuff. So.
And even when we talk about aspirations, I think obviously coming from sort of different backgrounds, all of us, like, it's easy in a world that tells you maybe to not aspire for things, to have, we are lucky and blessed to have parents that have always told you that you should and you can, you know, that you can achieve things that you can achieve. And
completely.
I think we're a testament to them at the end of the day.
Completely.
It sounds so corny now.
No, it is.
It does, doesn't it?
No, it is.
But you have to be grateful and recognize
it. You have to. And it's funny because, like I said, you spend all that time thinking, man, they must hate me. Man, what is it?
Forget about your girlfriend.
Yeah, what I got to do to.
Exactly. And look at you laughing at that girlfriend that you had before.
Yeah. You know,
she's crying somewhere.
Yeah, she is. She's crying somewhere.
I'd be upset too. Can you imagine?
You know what?
She's
I'm not gonna lie.
On Instagram,
hopefully, she doesn't hear this though. But she did reach out to me like on Facebook. Like, but you know what? A lot of people did that. You know, when like you break through, they're like, "Oh, hey,
like,
T."
People from grocery school are like,
"Yo, how are you doing?" I was like,
"Hey, T, babe."
Yeah. I'm T now. But wait, we haven't spoke for 10 years, you know. But you know, so that's it. But you know, it's just one of those things. But yeah, keep You know, I always say positive vibes only, keep negative vibes away from you, keep your family and friends close and be true to yourself and you won't go wrong in life. And, you know, you make a mistake, hands up, keep going, you're human, it's going to happen. That's the best way to be.
Do you, isn't it?
Yeah, there we go.
So thank you so much for reaching, well, we reached out to you and you replied so quickly.
Oh, it's all good. As soon as I saw that, because again, you know, you guys are doing your thing. You don't know where this will lead to, you know? Right now you're doing it, I can tell, because you love it and you're doing it together. Man, keep doing it because the platform is there. If you look at people now, you see the Receipts podcast. And now they're on Radio
BBC,
One, you know?
Cash.
Yeah, that's it. You know, they're doing their thing. And this is what I keep saying is, you know, if you do something you love and you keep pushing, in this day and age with all the tools that are free to you, you will break through. Mm-hmm. You just have to have that determination. No one's going to come hand it to you.
Yeah, I love that you said that because I'm reading this book at the moment called Deep Work and it talks about like three ways in which you can get success. Mm. And one is obviously having like a lot of capital, but that's not even possible for like a lot of us. And then the two...
We're not all Kylie Jenner's here.
No, exactly. And the other two things are either being an expert in your field. So that means spending so much time and... Using like having useful, intelligent work that we're doing, and the other way, which I think is probably easiest for all of us, is to make use of the technology and the tools that we have available to us. And it's interesting to know that you've done the latter two, and actually you're achieving that first one.
Definitely.
Pretty dope.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for talking to us today.
That's my pleasure.
You've given us a lot that we wanted to find out.
Absolutely. All about that. Did we touch on the unconscious money?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, because that's for the history
bit.
That's the goal.
That's the goal, people. Think of that early. I would say, you know, sometimes I think, I don't know. I talk about, you know, should you live your life and enjoy it? I sometimes wish I got serious quicker.
Yeah.
You know, it's easier in retrospect because then I think I would be further on in my journey. I was in Marbella partying too much at that time, living my best life. Yeah. But I think then sometimes you need to get that out of your system.
Exactly. You go along the journey for a reason. There's a reason that you have to party in Marbella to be now.
You
and
have
there's
to.
Lessons that you've learned along that way as well.
Yeah. Big time, definitely.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ashok. It's been amazing to have you on the podcast. And just to learn so much from you and be inspired by you and, you know.
You guys inspire me, and I don't mean that in a corny way. Every time I see people doing their thing, that's what pushes me. And I think truly people, if you're going to be successful, don't see someone doing their thing and let it make you feel a certain way about it.
No, not at all.
You know, it should make you go, wow, I need to up my game and that person's doing them, let me shout them. Don't
let it be about to tear them down.
You know, that's always
it's what you said about how there's lanes.
Yeah,
you know.
Always. Everyone's got their own.
Exactly.
We actually need to say bye now, guys, because we keep saying bye and then coming back to it.
And that phone's been ringing. Patients are like out there going, yo, what's going on?
So thank you so much, guys. Mm-hmm. Take care. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Bye.
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 Catch us over on www.afterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthelettersafterthel Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.